Thought I heard some Teddy in there, so I was just gonna let it go. Mood scale 76. Better have my donuts. Bad news ramen. We're back here.
If you had to guess who did this song, who do you think it'd be?
Whoever produces Doom stuff.
Pretty close. It's Jay Dilla. He also produced Tribal Quest stuff too. Whenever I hear this song, I think of like waking up at probably about 10:30. Nah. Getting ready for work at 10:30 and then driving into the card room at like 11:45 at night. And
so getting up at 10:30 at night.
Yeah, I usually get up around like 7:30. Yeah, that was quite a life. But I remember there was this one prostitute she'd always play. And, you know, when she was hot, I mean, like when she was hot with the cards. Okay. She was never really hot. But when she was hot with the cards, she tipped really well. And then plus she was like very loud. So a lot of people would complain, especially like all the players that play her table would complain because she would win and she was like this really loud and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so one night, they were telling me that, you know, I had to stand over there and watch them and stuff and kind of tell the other people to calm down because she was good for the game, you know, because she was bringing a lot of money and she was winning.
She was good for business.
She was good for business, yeah. So like every 10 she'd win, she'd give me like $5. So like she played for probably about like an hour and I probably made like $50 off of her. And so, like, two nights later, she came again, and...
She demanded you to be standing there so she
could get the heater. No, but, I mean, the whole thing, if you're going to give me $50 in, like, 1 hour, I'm going to stand over there. And she wasn't as hot as she was last time, so she's winning, like, certain hands here or there. But instead, what she would do is, like, she would, after her hand, she would rub my arm. And I'd be like, lady, what the hell are you doing rubbing my arm? And it's like, I know where your hand's been. I don't want you touching my arm, you know?
I thought she said that to you.
No.
I know where your hand's been.
Yeah. Yeah, I told her that. No. I was like, I know. It's not that I don't know where your hand's been. I've known where your hand's been, and I don't want that excess stuff on me. So go ahead. It's just a little trip down memory lane.
We're doing a little memory lane. All right, so, I don't know. Last week's show was, it kind of went in a couple different directions. It had its reasons, but I'm glad we're back here. We missed a week, so you know maybe it's just had a little ring rust coming off missing a week. So you know we're on the road to payback here, which is kind of one of their you know secondary type pay per views. But you know I think the build is going pretty well, not necessarily for the whole thing, but specifically actually.
I think it's going well?
Not for the whole show.
Okay,
but. For the specific thing I want to talk about, which is Evolution and Shield, and I'm actually enjoying what the Shield's doing. Well, I'm always enjoying what the Shield's doing, but I'm actually enjoying the way Evolution's playing it. I think they're doing a really good job. I don't mind the fact that Shield keeps getting beat down because within the context of what's going on, you know, it makes sense, and it's not in a way in any way that's making them look bad. It's like you know they start off good, like you know yesterday like Triple H broke out the sledgehammer or whatever. So like all the reasons or all the times where Evolution ends up getting the advantage, like it's never in a way that's making the Shield look inept or like they don't know what's going on. And I think this is going to be, I'm thinking this is going to be like the launching pad for Roman. So I'm really looking to the match. The thing that I like about the match, because we've seen plenty of six-man matches, but I like the fact that it's elimination. So that's really kind of got me kind of amped up for it. The one thing I don't like is they've now added the stipulation that I think like Shield is no longer going to be on Raw if they lose the match, which in itself I don't have a problem with, but it just kind of tells me for sure, like, I know who's going to win now, because there's no way they're going to keep Shield off. So, you know, I don't have a problem with it, you know, in a vacuum as that stipulation, but, you know, I think it kind of tips the hand of how of what's going to happen, but I'm still really looking forward to the match, because I think the Evolution's been putting on good matches. I thought the tag match they did was pretty good. I thought, and you never hear me say this, but I thought Triple H did a really good job on the mic promoting this match, like, as that. Cause and we talked about this before. A lot of times when they have the contract signings at the as the main event, it kind of, like, doesn't live up. But I thought they did a great job, like, all around. And I thought Triple H was really good on the mic for that segment, too. So I just want to start off talking about the Evolution Shield buildup, because to me that's the best thing going right now.
There was one thing we didn't bring up with that, with the whole Shield Evolution, and it was probably like 3 weeks ago maybe, where Evolution came out and they started really kind of focusing on Roman Reigns in terms of their promo and stuff, and then, excuse me, everybody came out and it was anarchy. But yeah, that was always kind of like a thing too. It's like, well, why are they singling them out? It's a couple things that this can go, is that Reigns could be like the fourth member of Evolution. You know, that's one way that it can go. I don't know if that's going to happen, because I think they're too strong as where they are right now. There's no way that they can take the Shield off of Raw, because when you take out all the workers in Raw, and that's pretty much what this past Raw was, it was very bad. I mean, it's just a really bad show.
Zack Ryder came back.
Yeah, okay. So when you take out the workers, say, like, you don't have the Wyatt family work, you don't have Shield work.
Daniel Bryan's hurt.
So you're and Dolph Ziggler's nowhere to be seen, and then Damian Sandow is, they've made that guy so bad where he's just, like, worse than a jobber. But I will agree with you. I thought Cody Rhodes and Goldust against Evolution, I thought that was a really fun match. Mm-hmm. And I really like what Randy Orton did in those three instances of the RKOs that he did. I mean, coming out of nowhere is just that's when the RKO really works.
Yep.
And to a small part, I really like the work that Batista's doing. I think Batista is playing. You kind of forget what this guy used to do back before they tried to give him the mantle of, like, being the top guy. Mm-hmm. I really like this role of him before, and of course you brought this up before with when he can be the power guy. It works really well.
It's like, yeah, not to cut you off here, but it's like when Batista was a first member of Evolution before he kind of, like, started getting a big name and went solo. When he was the muscle of that group, it worked really well. And it's kind of full circle back to that point. And I think that's the best way to use this guy. And I think, you know, not to sidetrack it, but, like, kind of what we've been saying about guys like Ryback and stuff. Like, that muscle guy in a good faction with other guys that can talk and carry the promos is the best way to use someone like Batista. And I think, yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, they're doing it good.
Well, even when he can play off of someone else's promo where Cody Rhodes called him, like, a skinny jean sellout and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it works. He's like a perfect foil for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I really think I've really enjoyed watching Batista over the past couple weeks, just with what he's been doing, the people that he's been fighting. He's fought Dolph. He's fought, I think he fought Roman Reigns, and then he also fought Rollins as well, I think, over the past couple weeks or whatever it was. So I really enjoy just that kind of aspect of it where he's winning those matches, or it's a disqualification, but he's being, and it's the right way to protect a guy, right? I mean, he's being protected. He's not being this, like, overpowerful guy that's always winning. Mm-hmm. That's more reserved for, say, like a Triple H or, say, like a Randy Orton, but he's slowly kind of been like a one of their top workers over the past month, and it's nice to see where he's not shoved down our throats, and he's more tailor-made. I mean, it's funny, I was thinking, it's like, you know, Randy 3 months ago was kind of like a guy unto himself, and now he's kind of back in this role of being in a faction. But maybe that's the best way that's probably the best way we like Randy Orton, is within a faction, whether it's Legacy, whether it's a part of Rated R or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's, you know, when you brought up the Shield and Evolution, I was just like, oh, I don't want to talk about these guys because it's been boring for the past couple weeks. But there is kind of like guilt by association because Raw was so bad that I really couldn't find anything good out of it. So I'm glad that you kind of reminded me that, you know, there was a good tag match, and the the segment for the contract signing did its job. It's like, yeah, you want to buy the pay-per-view now. It's like textbook wrestling, and you're going to buy the pay-per-view, or you don't have to because you have WWE Network, but you're going to watch it.
Bought it. Yeah.
Bought
it. Yeah. No, I think it's doing a... I think that was one of the better contract signing segments for me because, like, they've become really... what's the word I'm looking for here?
Stagnant?
Stagnant, but it's chalk, man. It's like they come out, they sit down, one guy talks, the other guy talks, they stare at each other, somehow it breaks into a fight, right? This one, they didn't have any pretense of, like, well, let's go through all the rigmarole and go through all the motions of what we have to do before we get to the part where we fight in this contract thing. Like, they came out, like,
towards Seth down.
Yeah, they just, like Seth and Dean start talking, Roman just tosses everything out of there and sign the contract, let's go. And I like that. It was a good change of pace compared to what the typical WWE contract signing has become, and I thought it worked really well.
So one thing I want to bring up is the dark match for the main event tonight was the Wyatt family versus the Shield. And I think the Shield won, but what do you think the state of WWE is right now? It's because you look at all the guys, or you look at all the storylines, and to me it really starts becoming like bubblegum late 1980s type storytelling. You know, it's like you have a guy like Adam Rose. You kind of have the manager, you know, kind of taking care of Cesaro with Paul Heyman and him, and just there's that kind of archetype there or prototype there. And then you have Big E coming out with the flag, and then you kind of have like a comic foil and Damian Sandow. I mean, is this what you kind of want to see? I mean, there's nothing really compelling right now, and even, you know, like the whole Daniel Bryan. You know, is he going to give the belt? That was even anticlimactic. You know, and it's just like, I was sitting there watching it because you weren't giving me beef too much for not watching it. But I kind of feel like, well, I should probably watch it because for this podcast, I should know what the hell's going on. But nothing happened out because of it. And then it became a storyline involving Brie Bella. And I'm sitting here like, you know, I'm like driving home from work or whatever. I'm going like, well, what happened in that segment? I know a whole lot of nothing happened. And then somehow Brie Bella was involved. And how is this, what is this worth? You know, like, was she going to be fired or something like that if he doesn't? I don't know what the hell it is.
That's right? What it is, yeah.
So she's going to be fired if he doesn't
give up the title.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't get it. And I'm just talking about programming as a whole. Like, you bring out someone like Adam Rose. I mean, he's bad. Then then you have, like, kind of this whole thing with Alicia Fox, which is really bad.
That was a terrible segment, man. Like, I don't know what they were trying to get.
Not only that, but then you have, what's her name? You have that dork from Australia. She's doing her dumbass dance.
I think she's Canadian, but
whatever. Does it really matter?
Nevertheless.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like you have, it's so gimmick driven, and I don't know if it's a backlash because Daniel Bryant really got over because the fans supported him. We know Zack Ryder got buried, and he had kind of an IWC following. We all know what happened to CM Punk. I mean, where do you see wrestling going right now? And do you like it?
Right now, nah. I mean, aside from like these two storylines, that is Shield Evolution and Bray and Cena. There's really no storyline going. A little bit,
and even Bray and Cena is bad.
It's bad, but Bray's at least good. It's a storyline.
But Cena's promo that he cut on Monday was so cookie cutter and so like Pollyanna, and
I thought it was funny too because like when he started when Bray was out of the ring and he started going on his little rant, like you even see like Bray's kind of like he's ad-libbing still, kind of like saying a couple things here and there with no mic, and that's like classic what you got to do, like, you know, reacting to the moment, and Bray's great at that. And then Cena's, he didn't know how to react whenever Bray went off script or kind of like ad-libbed in the moment. Cena just like, he's kind of like stumbles and then just kind of goes back to the script because that's all he knows how to do. It's pretty bad.
So to answer the question that I brought up, I mean, you know.
No, like,
because it's funny that you do bring up Cena because, you know, Cena is one of these guys that he has to follow the script, and he's been, quote, successful at that. But at the same time, every wrestling fan in the know is just kind of looking and going, like, what the hell is this?
I mean, I think the thing that it is, like, kind of throwing that whole feud off track is people really like Bray Wyatt, and he can't be just your traditional classic heel because he's too over right now. And it kind of goes back, I think, to what we were kind of talking about a month ago when I kind of brought up a thing I read off of JR's blog where he's saying, like, you know, you can't have your best heel or your main heel getting too much like support from the fans. And I think that's kind of where it's at. Like, it partly doesn't work because, like, so much of what Bray is saying is true, but now it seems like we're at a point where the crowd also knows that what he's saying is true. And I think that's kind of throwing off your traditional, like, what they would like to get out of this feud of making John Cena kind of like the beacon of all things good and Bray evil. It's like people know that, I think maybe it's because of the internet or something, but people know and have kind of faced the reality that what Bray is saying is there's a whole lot of truth to it. And he's the guy that's much realer than this character.
Which shouldn't even be the case.
Right.
Because this guy is so, like, so out there.
Right.
And but people believe what he says. You know, I think it was a podcast. I think it was Stone Cold when he was interviewing Jim Cornette. And Cornette was saying, like, you know, like, you can't be a heel like the way you were before because everybody's so, you know, they're so into the game or they're so, like, savvy with the way the business works that you can't have the typical heel anymore. Well, it's kind of a, you know, so you kind of have these heels that kind of have to reinvent themselves and kind of break new ground. I think, like, the last, like, textbook heel that you had was probably, like, CM Punk when you turned heel because he was so good at doing it. And he followed, it was like textbook, it was so refreshing to see because it was like textbook one-on-one. It's like, this is how you be a heel. And he did it. And, you know, and it was kind of a case where he beats up on Lawler or calls Lawler out after he has his heart attack. And then they're doing, like, Mae Young's, like birthday party, and he comes out and destroys the whole thing and whatever it is. Does there have to be a reinvention of the babyface? And what does a babyface have to do now to kind of get over?
I mean, I think I don't think they have to reinvent the wheel. I mean, and I don't like going. I don't like to, like, make it seem like it's the easy call and go back to the Attitude Era. But, like, the faces, everything was pretty gray in the Attitude Era.
Name the top faces in the Attitude Era. Okay, like,
so you're talking about Austin Rock when he had his face run. Let's see.
And what was that? I mean, because both those guys weren't your typical face.
Right, but they were just themselves, and they trusted them that they'd go out there and do something good, and they could every time. And that was Foley. Like, I'm not a Foley fan, like, you know this, but Foley was good. Foley is good. And Foley was good at that
Foley
time.
Foley is God.
Well, it was both.
Yeah.
but yeah, like, yeah, those guys all worked as faces. I mean, they could get annoying, I guess, after a certain point.
Well, Austin did get annoying. I mean, I felt for a while he was very annoying. But he was always, because of his catchphrases, but he was always making new catchphrases. To me, Foley was never really annoying because, you know, Foley in the end, he was going to fight. And he was going to get down and dirty. So I never really had a problem with Foley.
Right.
I had a problem with Austin. And I had a problem with Rock.
At a certain point, sure.
Yeah.
But, like, for the time where they were kind of just allowed to run with it, take the ball and run, I thought they did a great job, and it wasn't, you know, like, it wasn't so scripted, it wasn't so, like, so contrived. They were allowed to be a little bit more of who they really are, and it worked. And they don't really let the baby faces, well, I don't know if I can even say baby faces, but they don't let, you know, Cena is very limited in what he can do and what they let him do. And they don't let him come off as a real person.
Okay, so let's do this then. Let's do a little bit of we're not going to do word association, but it's going to be an extension of word association. The shield is faces. Why did they work as faces?
Because even though they turned them faces, they didn't change at the core who they are and what they do. They still do essentially the same thing.
Which is what?
They go out and they're ready to fight every time. They work well as a team. They don't have any dissension, so you can kind of believe that they're working as a team. You don't have to worry about it at some point. Like, I mean, you know, down the line, someone's going to turn on somebody, but it's not inevitable, as Brad Pitt would say at this point, right?
Your fame, your money,
my cars, my house, my yacht,
my bitch.
Inevitable.
Okay, so and I'm in total agreement with
right,
you.
Right.
They basically go out there and kick ass.
Yeah, like, because you've seen a lot of turns where like someone's like a dominant heel. The minute they turn them face, they turn into cowards and they're running away all the time. They never did about the shield, and that's what makes
it. It's not the other way around. Doesn't usually when they turn heel, they become cowards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so that's that kind of turn, right?
And the shield, whether they've been face or heel, they've never been cowards.
Exactly. Yeah. They've always been ready to fight.
I mean, they back down, but it's like more strategic.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so we established the shield, you know, because they kick ass, you know, they can kick ass. They cut great promos. They don't sacrifice who they am. Who they am. I am what I am, Popeye. They don't sacrifice who they are to do what they need to do, right? Okay, so the Usos. Do you think they're successful as faces? And what's the level of their success as a face? And why do you like them as faces? Because they're a very gray area in terms of whether we should like them or not. But tell me what you think about the Usos.
I like the Usos strictly on their ring work. I think while on SmackDown, like they got a little mic time. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. At least they kind of like were. It seemed like they're kind of developing a little bit of character. I don't know. I really, this is a bias, but I really don't like that they're like now all of a sudden John Cena's backup. But it kind of works for the story. I can't say it doesn't. I mean, I think their tag team run is successful because it's not like they're being given a lot. It's not like that there's any like team that there's really out there for them to feud. So it's successful, but you know, if I was gonna rate it on like a grading scale, I'm going like somewhere between C+ and B.
And you know, we're talking about Bray Wyatt being really old school in terms of what he does. To me, the Usos are very old school in terms of them being faces, and it's not a case where I'm sitting there not liking it. I think it's kind of, I wouldn't say refreshing, but it shows that there's still a time and place for that type of face, where their ring work can put them over, and then you know, with the help of say like JBL, Michael Cole, like all the announcers, you know, really kind of pushing them along, and then even like association with the top face, and that kind of gives them a little bit more clout too to be a face. Now, let's talk about the white elephant in the room, and the reason why and to give you some sort of kind of background, he is getting cheers. You know, in some places. I mean, there's some places that he's still getting cheers. It's most of the, like, the dumb fans area where you get cheers, but John Cena has a face.
I just think he's, like, extremely stale. I mean, he's the classic what they've done with, their number one baby face, but it's just a tired act at this point. He has moments, but it's nothing that makes me interested in what's going on.
The sad thing was that the time that I really kind of, not because I don't think I'd ever liked John Cena, but the time that I felt that he was doing the job as who he was is when he was going against Randy Orton and kind of walking that line between the authority and Randy Orton, that kind of that whole type of play back and forth that they were doing. I thought he was very successful in that. And then, you know, when he started kind of losing here and there, but he always goes back to his old standby. It's like, well, if I'm going to lose, it's going to be because of some supernatural reason. And it's just kind of a case where that's really the only baby faces you have. And you look at kind of what we think works. The Shield works because of the best workers in the WWE, which I would have never thought I was going to say like a year and a half ago. But they're the well, we have Dan. Really? Well,
I mean, you knew Seth could work.
I knew all of them could work, but you know, this is when you had CM Punk. This is when you had Daniel Bryan. So the one guy we did forget was Daniel Bryan. So Daniel Bryan is a babyface. Is it working, or what is it about him that makes him work as a babyface?
You know, I think it works, but I still would say that they...
Because, okay, his title run so far, passing grade or failing grade?
Incomplete, but I think that they...
Because you are the teacher, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
this is where you start calling the parents and going like...
I don't call parents.
You don't?
Hey, you shouldn't know. I just think they missed a chance.
When you call the parents, you go, "Hi, this is Mr. Ballsbaugh."
I put Dougie Fresh on. I'm like, "Hey." Dun, 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 dun. I just think they missed the boat on when he was at his hottest and when they could have gotten the most out of making him champion. So it's like I feel like he deserved to be the champion, and I don't have, you know, I'm glad he got his run here, but it's kind of, I think it was kind of done out of, I feel like it was done out of desperation, and they didn't catch it when they should have caught it. They just, the evidence became so overwhelming that they couldn't deny the fact that they needed to put the belt on the guy anymore. But when he was at his hottest, when they could have got the most out of it, they still tried to hold off and slow play it.
So are they burying Daniel Bryan right now?
It's hard to. I mean, I can't say.
How come you can't say?
Because it's hard to. Why
don't you ask me that question then?
Because it's hard to. Oh, I will. Let me answer.
All right. So I'm sorry.
For me, it's hard to say, like, with a guy who has just had a neck surgery and is going to be out for at least a couple of months, like, that they're really burying him, because what exactly can you do with a guy that's got a broken neck? So it'd be hard for me to say that that's exactly what's going on right now. But before he got hurt, I mean, they weren't giving him any great shakes. What do you think, sir?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. I think your argument is totally invalid, because even before the neck surgery, they were still burying him. So he wins the championship. They put him with Kane, who's been like a non-entity this whole time. And then the main storyline becomes Shield versus Evolution. It becomes Bray Wyatt versus John Cena. They try to placate everybody by saying, "Oh, Daniel Bryan's going to be last." But if you look at the two wrestlers that were totally over with everybody, I'm talking about with the common person, with IWC, with the Smarks, they put those guys second fiddle. CM Punk's run the whole time, he never main evented any pay-per-view. He might have main evented one against Daniel Bryan or maybe even Chris Jericho, but even then I don't think he did. So I think they are burying this guy. They don't put him in any major storyline. How come you don't put Daniel Bryan with the Usos versus Evolution? Or how come you don't put Daniel Bryan versus Bray Wyatt or the Wyatt family with the Usos? Especially when the match that they had, Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan, is better than any match that John Cena or Bray Wyatt can have. Bray Wyatt cannot work with John Cena. Okay, Bray Wyatt is not that good yet where he can make anybody else look good. And especially when you give all the backstage power to John Cena and you put him in a guy with Bray Wyatt, and you know that Cena is going to pretty much dictate what he wants in terms of the storyline, that's a major problem there. They have buried Daniel Bryan. Business could be a whole lot better right now if the very first guy that Daniel Bryan faced was Bray Wyatt, because everything is there. Bray Wyatt beats him at a pay-per-view. Bray Wyatt can turn around after Daniel Bryan wins and says, "Hey, I already beat you once. How come I'm not going for the title?" Because the lie that everybody tells you about how you can, you know, if you work hard enough and if you can be better than the other person, you know, and beat that other person and become the world champion. Well, you know, guess what? Corporate America will not allow someone like me to, and I'm just going off the cuff. I mean, Bray Wyatt can cut a way better promo than I can. So that was tailor-made for him, too. Okay. So right off the bat, he play second tier, he plays third tier in terms of storyline, and the guy that he faces is a guy that has proven to be, Kane has never made anybody better, ever. You had him versus The Undertaker, and Undertaker has probably beat him 15 times during his 20-some-odd streak at WrestleMania. Never made anybody better. Everybody fell asleep during that match. I fell asleep whenever it was Undertaker versus Kane at WrestleMania. So you put him with a guy that is proven not to make anybody better. The only way Kane makes people better is if it's a tag team. And that's been proven. I mean, from X-Pac to the Brothers of Destruction, whatever it is. I like Kane. I respect Kane. I enjoy what he does, but only when he's paired with someone else. So you put him with a guy that can't get over. This, to me, this is like a typical like NWA job where everybody has to vote who the champion is, and you have all the major players that everybody's, all the big promoters say, like, you know what? You're not going to be champion this time around. So that person goes, okay, so if you're going to pick this guy, when he comes to my territory, I'm going to bury him, and I'm still going to be the star of that territory, and this guy's just going to do nothing. You know, I'll unexpectedly be gone when this champion comes in, so sales are going to be down because I'm not part of that event. They have buried this guy. And this guy, you know, we went through, like, the Shield as a face, what makes the Usos as a face, what makes John Cena as a face. The one thing we didn't say out of any one of those guys, you can say it for the Shield, but the first thing that didn't pop in your mind was because this guy has overwhelming support from everybody. Daniel Bryan has overwhelming support from everybody in wrestling, from the wrestlers, from the fans. But that's the one thing we didn't say as a face within what the face is in the WWE environment right now. The Shield does have it, but Daniel Bryan, at his peak, had it tenfold. And you did bring that up, but the one thing we never said was because people like him, right?
Yeah. So I just think it would have been too soon to put him right into a feud with Bray. And like, and we kind of talked about this. Like, I thought, you know, you drag it out. You let Daniel Bryan have a few feuds with some guys. You let Bray kind of keep fighting with John Cena, and then that build towards something. So I would have been okay if that was what the storyline was. You know, I thought maybe it was too soon to just go straight into Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt. Not that it wouldn't have been good, but like, when Daniel Bryan won, he has to go out and defend. And to have Bray Wyatt be like the first guy to come in there and just get his ass kicked a bunch of times by Daniel Bryan would have been bad for Bray. So I was fine with the idea that they had to like drag that out and let Bray build up a little bit, let Daniel Bryan beat a few guys, and then when they went to a head, then you don't know what's going to happen. But I can't disagree with what you're saying about putting him in a feud with Kane, because, I mean, that was really, yeah, that's pretty much a burial. There was no need for any of that, and it really didn't do anything for either guy. So yeah, I can't disagree with that part of it.
And to piggyback off of what you said, I would have, the protecting Daniel Bryan to me would have liked to see him go against Evolution, but then what do you do with the Shield?
Right.
And, you know, there's not, and that this kind of lends to the problem again, where, and we've up to a year ago said, this roster is very, very deep. There's plenty of people, you know, there's plenty of guys in place that you can do and you can work with. But since they've buried everybody else, the Shield really can't go against anybody else except for the top guys in Evolution. So where do you put Daniel Bryan? I mean, so can you put him with Cesaro? Can you put him with, I wouldn't say Alberto Del Rio, but what about Sheamus? Because, you know, they're even saying, like, you know, Daniel Bryan and Sheamus would face off at WrestleMania. It just, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. It's like you have all these guys, and all these guys are pretty much stuck in the role. Like Sheamus being the U.S. champion, I don't know what that does for him. Cesaro is so ready to take off, but then he's in a feud with Sheamus over this belt that Cesaro already had. It's like why is he fighting for the U.S. champion? You've already made him U.S. champion. And when he's U.S. champion, you already buried him as U.S. champion. You're going to bury him again? What's the whole point of that? I mean, it's like you have guys like Sheamus. You have guys like Sheamus that can go do it, be in a program with Daniel Bryan and have really good matches. I think Sheamus, when he's working and he's working towards a match, I think he's a very good worker. You have a guy like, you know, Wade Barrett needed a little bit of time to kind of win the Intercontinental belt. So, but Wade Barrett's another guy you can bring in. I think the guy Taylor made was going to be Cesaro. I think Cesaro and Daniel Bryan, they could have had four or five matches, and each one could have been different, and it really could have established like Daniel Bryan as the worker man type champion. But instead, they put him with your old standby, who was Kane, and Kane was already established. I mean, Kane can be the guy where he's interfering in the Evolution matches and Shield matches. I mean, he could be, you know, he's already in that corporate entity. But then you kind of like, well, let's put you back in a mask and, you know, let's see what you can do. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, that, the whole thing with Kane didn't make any sense. And again, I mean, it probably sounds like making excuses at this point, but the same thing is probably could maybe be said about Cesaro. Is you don't want to put him in there when you're trying to build a guy, put him in there on a guy that he's going to have to lose a bunch to. But then they put him in this feud with like Swagger and RVD and now Sheamus, and he's losing his fair share. So, I mean, yeah, I think you could have got better matches putting him against Daniel Bryan. It would have been two guys that were extremely hot at the time. That probably would have been the better booking to go. It's something that people in WWE at least haven't seen. And they could probably both benefit out of it, whereas in the Kane and Daniel Bryan feud, really nobody benefited.
And at the same time, Cesaro can lose against Daniel Bryan because he's losing against a world champion. And during those matches, he can slowly build his stock
right.
back up.
Right.
And I think for a small part, you can do that with Bray Wyatt as well. The only problem is that if Bray Wyatt can't win a couple matches here, and I agree with you, like if he's losing all the time to Daniel Bryan, then you're kind of not extending his character to what I think they want it to be.
I just think Bray has still kind of like the appearance of invincibility going, whereas Cesaro doesn't. You know, I think they got a good role going with him, and he's kind of getting better. But I mean, we've seen Cesaro lose enough to know that hey, this guy, it's not like this guy can never lose a match. But Bray, we've really not seen lose very often. So I think losing would have done more damage to Bray than it would to have done to Cesaro.
So you have the crumpled piece of paper.
Yeah. So okay,
I haven't read it, but so in true Alicia Fox fashion, I'm going to say, get that camera out of my face.
Should I pour some Coke on myself too?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so
get that camera out of my face.
So
get that camera out of my face. Go ahead.
Trying to make me think about that segment. All right. I got a topic that I want to get to, but before that, I just want to wrap it up because I was going to try to segue into another thing.
You're the Chappelle box or what? Wrap it up?
No, yeah. Wrap it up, B. wrap that gavel up. Because we started off talking about Evolution and S.H.I.E.L.D. and just one more thing I wanted to ask you about Evolution. And you sort of addressed it in your idea when you're talking about perhaps Roman Reigns could turn. And that would be interesting. I hadn't thought about that angle. But my question was, does Evolution, in your opinion, need a fourth guy? Are they working fine as the three? Or do you think having one more guy would make them a little more dominant, a little stronger-looking faction? So I know the original thought was Evolution was a four-man crew. And you weren't necessarily pining for Ric Flair to come back. But you did kind of bring up this idea that another member should be a young guy, the next generation guy they want to groom. So now that we're like a month or so into this thing, do you still think they need a fourth guy, or you think the way that they're working it with the three they have is the best way to continue?
So there's two things I want to bring up. One is WWE released a new DVD about factions, and you look at kind of all those factions, and most all of them have like four guys. And what I think really, I think the Shield is a great faction, but what I think what really kind of stops them from being one of the greatest of all time is because they only have three guys. I love, I don't even want to say the word love. I mean, you can't have a faction without four guys. I mean, it's just a given. You cannot have a dominant faction without a fourth guy, because that fourth guy can be a lot of things. The fourth guy can be the straight heel that nobody likes, a.k.a. Tully Blanchard with the Four Horsemen. Even when you liked all these other guys, you hated Tully. With Evolution, I thought Evolution was a really good playbook. You had the established guys, and like Flair was the mentor, Triple H was in his prime, and then you had these two guys that were up-and-coming stars. NWO, you had Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and then you have a guy like X-Pac. So kind of fit in the same role of, like, everybody hated X-Pac. Nobody liked X-Pac. They liked these three other guys. Well, they liked two guys. They didn't like Hogan, but they liked Hall and Nash, but then you had X-Pac to kind of bring back the whole heel form back in. In saying that, I think Evolution... I think it's been fun to watch them, but whenever they come in, my hand's kind of on the fast forward button, just because I already know who these three guys are, and the roles aren't really established, because you have Triple H, who is the mentor, kind of like the power. He's like kind of like the J.J. Dillon of the Four Horsemen. He doesn't really get involved too much physically, and when he does, it doesn't really work unless he brings in the sledgehammer. And he covers up the sledgehammer with his hand. I never understood why he covers up the sledgehammer with his hand. I mean, I do, but it's like, well, then get Tully's, roll of quarters or something, you know? That's pretty much what you're doing.
Power of the punch.
Yeah, I think they do need a fourth guy. I'm not pining for Roman Reigns to be the fourth guy. But I want them to have a fourth guy so the roles can kind of be established a little bit. I think, like I said, the faction has to start with four. You can have a super faction like the NWO, but you always have like the kind of the core four guys. It was X-Pac in the beginning, then it became Macho Man. After that, then it became Scott Steiner for a little bit here and there. You always kind of had like a fourth alpha dog, but you definitely knew he was at the bottom of the pack.
Yeah. Wolfpack had five guys.
Yeah.
DX had four guys.
Yeah. So I enjoy what Evolution is doing. I like this program that they're running. But at this pay-per-view, if one of the Shield turns on him and then he becomes a fourth member of Evolution, how big would that be? I mean, that is just like textbook swerve. And we haven't had a swerve in a long time. And if there were to swerve after this, I mean, any one of those guys. I mean, that's a moment where you get on Twitter and or you text me and you say, hey, this guy just turned on the Shield, and it would blow everything up. I'm not saying they should do it because it's going to blow Twitter up, but, I mean, back in the 80s, right? It's like, yeah, the pay-per-view. We never got the pay-per-view because our parents wouldn't let us get it because it was like $50, and we'd have to get $50 of our own money. You know, for some reason, parents back then would not buy pay-per-views, even if it was like Tyson or whoever was like, we are not buying a pay-per-view, you know, but TV should be free or whatever it is, right? But two or three days later, or we go to the playground on Monday or, you know, Monday, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know, like for the rich spoiled kid that didn't know shit about wrestling but always got the pay-per-view, he would tell us what would happen. And wouldn't you, like, be waiting to get home to, like, give me a call so we could talk about this major swerve? That's kind of how the way I feel right now. It's like the time is right for a huge swerve, and everybody wants it. Everybody wants, like, a huge swerve no matter what it is. You know, maybe Daniel Bryan is the fourth member of Evolution. I don't know. You know, maybe they start making sure that he is the guy that always wins the title. You know what I'm saying? So something like that. Yeah, Evolution does need a fourth guy. Just not because they need it to be successful. I think they're successful right now. I'm slowly starting to enjoy what they do. But Triple H is not a full-time guy. Randy Orton and Batista is, but
Batista's not a full-time guy right now. He's about to leave for a
That's what I'm saying. Promotion. That's what I'm saying, because, you know, right after Raw ended, they showed the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
So this looks awesome, by the way.
Yeah. And you saw X-Men.
I didn't see it yet.
Very good.
You saw it?
Oh, yeah. It's great. Yeah. And they had the full-on trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff. It's nice seeing Rocket Raccoon there. I think if Batista is going to be gone, if he's going to leave, then is Evolution still going to be around if Batista's gone?
Yeah, Evolution doesn't work.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. So is Evolution done after this because Batista's going to be gone doing his press junkets?
I don't think they can be done, so I would think, yeah, it would make a lot of sense that a fourth guy would have to come into the fold so they can have at least three. I mean, they probably got to injure Batista out of it at this match, which will be fine. But, yeah, you'd probably think that they need, like, another guy to hold down the fort.
So just about the time I'm starting to like Batista, he's going to be gone, right? Typical WWE, right? Yeah.
They should bring in Brad Maddox.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Brad Maddox. Yeah, he's going to be the new member of Evolution. Muscle. Yeah, the new member of Evolution, yeah.
All right, that's fine. Okay, now this is the other one, and this one I'm really curious. What do you think so far of one Bo Dallas? Do you believe?
Oh, I definitely believe. I think he needs to change his finisher, though. I think his finisher is like the weakest finisher
ever. That's exactly. I like
everything about the guy, except for his finisher.
That finisher is pretty fucking weak, man.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't like his intro music, but it kind of fits like what he's supposed to be. But nah, he's playing like they're playing that character. I think exactly the way that it needs to be. I think his work's been pretty solid. And I'm watching him, and I think he's basically freaking Tim Tebow. He's like basically going out there with a Tim Tebow gimmick, and it's just the perfect amount of mic time. Like, not they're letting him talk a little bit, but not too much where he can expose like his limited mic skills. But the work in the ring is pretty good. The gimmick's like entertaining enough. But yeah, the finisher, he's got to come up with something else, man. That bulldog is pretty bad. The Bow Dog, as JBL said.
I don't have a problem with his character, and I don't have a problem with him playing that character because he plays it where he, and I'm not saying that this it's an extension of himself, but it's kind of like the same thing with like Bray Wyatt, right? It's like it's a gimmick that shouldn't work, and they're finding ways to make it work. I think he has a decent look to him. I think his ring work is okay. There's a moment where, like, say like Adam Rose, right? Like, I cannot stand Adam Rose's gimmick, but his finisher, it's like okay. It's kind
of
like,
yeah, he had a couple of solid moves on Swagger.
His finisher, I'm not a huge fan of his finisher, but it's one of those things where you look at it and you're like okay, and you rewind it to see it again, right?
If Bo was doing that finisher,
or any type of finisher,
yeah.
You know, even I would take right now, I'd take his brother's senton bomb, you know, something like that. Something that's really kind of organic and is not like, it works for Bray Wyatt. But just something like a finisher that is just like a believable finisher. It's funny, whenever like I make a wrestler in a video game or whatever it is, the finisher, if I like the guy, it's a finisher that is never based on using the ring in any type of way, right? Because you can't pull it off anywhere. And that's kind of what I've been liking about Randy Orton's RKO. What they kind of forgot about Randy Orton's RKO is that you can pull this thing off of anywhere. And he hasn't been doing it. And so finally, for the first time in a long time, he pulled it off of like the disaster kick from Cody.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's what people used to like. When he starts punching the ground or slamming on the mat and everybody knows it's coming, nobody likes it. It's when you can pull it off from anywhere, that's where it really works. And that's just, you know, he needs like a fast type of finisher that is effective. It doesn't have to be something you've never seen before, but it can't be no flipping bulldog, dude.
Yeah, nah.
And I looked at it. It's not a bad bulldog.
No, but it's not a finisher.
Yeah.
It's a really good setup move, but yeah, nah, I wholeheartedly agree on the finisher. But that's what I kind of want to check. You like the rest of what's going on with him, though?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, I think his intros, and I think his, like, I was going to say Titantron. They don't have Titantrons anymore. I think everything that he's doing leading up to it, that's a good gimmick. You know, that's a good gimmick to do. It's like, it's a gimmick that's so far-fetched, but and at the same time, it shows what he has personality-wise, which is a direct opposite from Adam Rose, which is like this whole, like, kind of, what do you call that? What's that type of partying that they call it? It was like big back in the 90s, right? Where you go like some
rave?
Yeah. So it's like kind of like a rave type atmosphere based on like taking a lot of acid and stuff and everything. Like that was maybe had its time. I mean, even when raves were going on, like someone asked like, let's go to a rave. I'm like, why the fuck would I want to go to a rave for? You know, it's like, I don't take no ecstasy. Yeah. You know, why
am I convicted on that dope?
Why the hell would I want to do that? And so now they're finally like starting to kind of have like this whole like dumb rave atmosphere. It just doesn't work. And then you bring out like a fat chicken, you know, and it's like that's supposed to like get Adam Rose all worked up. It's like,
it was the lemon.
Was it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Don't be a lemon. Be a rose.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That shows you how much I've been watching that game.
No, it's bad.
Yeah, so everything that Bo's doing, I don't mind. And do I want to see where the gimmick goes? Sure. But, hell, I mean, I've seen plenty of good gimmicks that have gone by the wayside, which is, you know, case in point is Damian Sandow. I don't know why you take a guy that has such a great gimmick, is so good on the mic, and you just make him like a kind of like comic relief.
Yeah. Nah, agreed, agreed. Yeah, they're definitely putting the clown suit on Sandow right now.
I'd rather see Sandow in the lemon suit than
How about him in the bunny suit?
Yeah, at least you wouldn't be able to see him in the bunny suit. But that lemon was more effective than Damian Sandow's Davy Crockett. Now, and I'm a huge fan of Davy Crockett. Like, Fess Parker is Davy Crockett. Man, I used to watch that stuff all the time, dude. They'd show it, like, on Channel 35. And when it was Davy Crockett week, man, I watched Davy Crockett every single time. So it's kind of sad that my favorite wrestler for a long time, the guy that I handpicked to say, like, this is a guy that I want to follow, is doing the biz like this, dude.
Especially when they match him up as your previous hero, Davy Crockett.
And that's what I'm saying.
And those
yeah.
two things matched up together still can't get him over with you.
He killed his first bar when he was only three. I know the Davy Crockett theme song, dude. Like, I marked out during Back to the Future when Marty goes back in time into the 1950s and he goes into the diner and they're playing the Davy Crockett theme song. I remember I was like 9 or 10 years old and I'm like, hell yeah, I love that song. I love that song.
Is that what got Slick Rick over with you so much?
Yes.
Davy Crockett, yeah. King of the Wild Frontier.
I love that song, dude. It's a great song. You should listen to it every now and then.
Some storytelling right there.
Yeah. All right.
Two other things I'll address and then I think maybe we can get into our little segments here. But since the last time we spoke, there was two I think pretty significant WWE signings, and that's Kenta has officially signed, and Prince Devitt, who was talking about kind of for a while, has also signed with WWE. So those two guys should be coming into NXT hopefully like by the end of summer, and then you know who knows how long it'll take till they get to the main roster, but. I mean, I think those are two really good workers that have a lot of potential to be big-time players on WWE.
So the first thing about Kenta, is that other Japanese dude still in NXT or whatever it is?
TNA?
No, the Japanese...
Oh, Sakura or whatever?
No, Hoshi Yatsumoto. What was that guy?
Hoshi Yatsumoto? you mean the first guy that kicked Sheamus' ass, Yoshitatsu?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, because I don't think WWE can coexist with two Japanese people on their roster. It's kind of like the whole thing when whatever it was. There was a time where the Dodgers could have had Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente play on the same team, but they already had one black guy, so. They weren't going to have a second black guy. So can you just imagine that? You have like two like Willie Mays and Clemente playing in the same outfield. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Clemente ain't no nigga, John. Look at the way he dances.
He's a talented. I can't believe you just put the N-word on our podcast, dude. That was taken from Curly's Way. So there's some carte blanche with that. Yeah, it's funny how they sent a guy like Kenta where the guy that... kind of had a similar style to Kenta and kind of took his finisher is no longer on the roster. So that is my kind of take on Kenta. WWE has never had a Japanese wrestler where they allowed to do what he could do. And that goes from Hakushi to the Rockers, who were recently inducted into our Hall of Kayfabe.
You mean the Orient Express?
Same. Rockers, you think you can beat us? So it was the Orient Express that was put in there. I don't want to put, what's his name in there? Who was their lightweight champion for a while?
Taka Michinoku.
Yeah, so I don't have...
Indeed.
I don't have a lot of high hopes for Kenta. The guy I do have a lot of high hopes for is Devitt, because Devitt looks like the real deal, dude. I mean, and I haven't seen a lot of pictures of Devitt. I saw, like, a picture of Devitt on Twitter. I was like, damn, like, that guy has the flippin' look. And if he's as good as you say he is, that guy could be kind of like your, your Desmond Wolfe that never happened, or your Nigel McInnes that's never happened.
What pictures did you see of Devitt?
I just saw him like in his wrestling trunks and.
So there's a couple of pretty crazy looking things he does with his body paint too, and so it was like two or three, but one was like, you know, it's him in that trunks that you probably saw him in, but he's got like his face and like most like his shoulders, like pretty much all down to his arms, and like the upper part of his torso is all painted, and it's got like the Punisher skull on his face, and then it's all black everything, but the Punisher skull on his face with the Punisher skull on the chest. It looks sick, dude. Okay. And then there's one that was like a Deadpool that was kind of painted on him as well, and then another one with Carnage. They look really good. It's like airbrushed. It looked really good. So
if Devitt wants that to get over in WWE, he just has to pretend that he created it, right? Kind of like the way Razor Ramon did the whole Scarface angle.
Still, hey Vince, check this out.
Yeah, and he's like, and Vince never saw Scarface. He's like, that's the best thing ever. You're a genius.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, they look really good. I don't know if they'll have any kind of licensing to let him do those things, but yeah, I mean. I think the guy could be the deal, and yeah, that's a good call of the Nigel McInnes that never was. So I got a lot of high hopes for Devitt. So hopefully him and Kenta too. I mean, I'm hoping these guys can come through and make some kind of impact. So I just wanted to address that because I think those are two guys on the horizon that, you know, they got a lot of potential to make a good impact.
So I want to cut you off now because we have done close to an hour on this podcast, and the funny thing is we've talked about wrestling for the majority of it. So let's have you pick the Holly Kayfabe this time. Let's have you finish the last two segments off. Let's see if you can knock them out of the park and do these last two segments. Let's see if you can be like your boy Miguel Cabrera.
Well, I don't know.
And go 3-for-3 with a couple of RBI.
I was going to kind of rely on you for the Kayfabe because I actually have a golden stick.
Okay.
But
Well, kayfabe is easy though. Golden Slick is a hard one, so yes. So that's good. Go ahead. I mean,
all right, I'll dig deep on this one, and I don't know.
You outlaw Ron Bass or what? Dino Bravo.
You're in the right time frame.
Okay.
Have
we ever put Don the Rock in there? We have put Don the Rock.
I think you did put Don the Rock in there. This guy wasn't even a guy that I was a huge fan of, or even you were, but I think kind of
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Looking back and kind of like seeing the work that he did.
Skinny bitches?
Bitches I want to fuck.
I'm Clarice.
Aunt
Clarice.
I think the guy did put a lot of good work in and had some good matches, even though I can't even ever really remember cheering for the guy. But I want to induct Tito Santana. I think I thought the Ariba baby was kind of corny. But the guy had good the flying forearm at the time, like that was a good ass flying forearm.
The flying forearm.
Yeah. The flying jalapeno. Yeah,
I've never seen him do a flying. I've seen him do the flying jalapeno.
Yeah, according to Jesse Ventura. But it was at the time that was a really good finisher, and he pulled it off nice. Guy could work in the ring, and I don't think he had any great shakes in personality, but for the time frame that he was in. I mean, he was a really good kind of mid-card worker. He could put on good matches with anybody he was with. Him and Martel were a really good tag team. Him and Tom Zank were a good tag team even. And I don't know, I just think he kind of fits into that category of guys that kind of fall by the wayside. People don't know a whole lot about, you know, unless they were kind of watching at the time. But if you look at the body of work that Tito Santana put out there, The guy was a pretty good worker, and I think he deserves to go.
So you're 2-for-2. I think Santana is the perfect guy to put in, a guy that I would never put in. Santana was, for us, at least as wrestling fans, he was a Steamboat before Steamboat was Steamboat to us. He was Macho Man before Macho Man was Macho Man before us. He was one of these guys where you only had, like, Saturday morning superstars, and when this guy would come on, you would watch him. And he did great matches, and it's kind of sad that he never really, he was an Intercontinental Champion, but he never had a great singles run. He always was kind of the extender of some guy that they wanted to push.
He's the ultimate enhancement talent.
Yeah, ultimate enhancement. But the thing is, he won at the same time.
Yeah,
I really like Santana. And it's kind of funny, like you kind of look at when we were first starting to, like, really know what a finisher is, that flying forearm, when we had your G.I. Joe guys, one of your best guys had that flying forearm.
Yeah, well, because he had that extra, like, kind of, like...
The padding?
Because he was the Cobra, la, 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 la. And he had that extra padding that extended past the elbow, so it was just the perfect guy to go flying forearm with.
Yeah, and very athletic, maybe too much arm bars here and there, but an old textbook-type wrestler who has actually found a life after wrestling. He's now like a high school teacher now, and just really kind of, you know, he doesn't really dwell on his past and stuff, or, you know, that's not who he is. That's just one of those guys that, you know, he wanted to become a professional wrestler. He was successful for it as a while. He kind of saw the writing on the wall when they made him be the Matador. And he was kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe this isn't the way I should go. And then he found a different career. I wish there was more guys like Tito Santana. I wish there was more guys that could have, like, a very legitimate run as a professional wrestler, whether he's a jobber, whether he's an enhancement talent, or whether he gets a run as a champion, and he can fall back on something else and really kind of have a good life after wrestling. He wasn't ever involved in major storylines, except for the guys that we really liked. The Martel turn was great. Really brought one of the best kind of one of the best probably two of the best promos ever. One was by Martel, the other one was by Slickster, calling him a refried bean, and he didn't take the money. He didn't take the money, foo. So yeah, I like Santana, dude. I think I don't want to say anything bad about the guy. I don't want to make fun of him. Very entertaining to watch in the ring. It really hurt when he came out as a Matador, because it's like, dude, I'm like, you gotta kind of give it up, dude. If you're the Matador now, and you're kind of playing off of this whole kind of race thing because you're a Mexican-American, it's like, it's probably time to hang it up. And he did.
Yeah.
And he was the only one that had to go through that. Steamboat had to do that as well when he came out as the Dragon and, like, blow fire.
My man, blow fly.
blow fire. Don't you know? Back down to earth. The first time ever I saw Tito Santana match.
Thank you.
So yeah, great choice. Not much more to say about him, unless you want to say something else, so we can shoot straight into the golden stick.
All right. So this one.
So not only that, but so you're 2 for 2. So you're probably going to be 3 for 3. And we still there might be a match that you might want to talk about later on too.
I don't know if I can go. I can dig that deep, but
we'll try.
Yeah. Isn't that what the lady told you when? When you said you couldn't cut the meat paper thin?
No, it was the Indian guy, yeah. The other try was when I like, you know, saw this really hot girl and I couldn't get an erection, I was like, try.
So, this one, the guy that's going to be the recipient of this golden stick probably could get about 10 golden sticks, and this wouldn't, I don't think, would not be the very best of his contributions, but I want to use it because today is the 18th anniversary of this promo, and that would be this guy coming out in what is essentially the Canadian tuxedo, denim on denim, saying, "You all know who I am, but you don't know why
I'm here."
Yeah, and that'd be Scott Hall. So this is the 18th anniversary of that promo. When he appeared on WCW for the first time, coming straight off of a WWE pay-per-view, and kind of started laying the groundwork for what was going to be the WCW. He laid out, you know, a few guys like Scheme Gene.
And Macho Man.
Right?
Where is Scheme Gene? Where is the Macho Man?
Yeah. So I just, it was a solid enough promo. I mean, it wasn't great. But it wasn't great by his standards. Okay? Like most guys, that might be like the best thing they ever cut. But I just think in what it led to, in kind of like the whole scheme of what happened, it was probably one of the more influential kind of debuts that you had in wrestling. And like you were talking about swerves, like about 20 minutes ago, it's like the beginning to probably the greatest swerve in wrestling.
So I was actually like maybe 2 days removed from that actual promo. I never saw the promo live, but they had it on Saturday night, and they, of course, you have Shivani, like,
blubbering all over.
Yeah, and, you know, then you have a Dusty kind of flibber-flabbering here at the same time. It was one of those promos where it made you stop and kind of go, okay, what is this? What, like, what's going on here? And I don't think people knew at the time, because, you know, you kind of look back at it. But when I first saw it, I was like, okay, so they're trying to claim some fame from WWE. I really don't like what's going on here. It's just really kind of a really weak way to try to get some type of recognition from your wrestling company. And then it just grew to something else. And that promo, I mean, at the time, it was like, it was nice to see. You know, it was like he comes out of the crowd, and you kind of stop what you're doing. And to a case where maybe I was just kind of like, because like back then when I would watch wrestling, it was kind of like in secret. Like I turned the channel on and nobody was in the room. And then when someone would come in the room, I'd change it. Kind of like how you used to do with your dad's Playboys and stuff and everything in the bathroom and stuff. Never me. But it was that kind of aspect where you kind of hid that you're a wrestling fan. Well, I remember when this promo came out, I didn't care who went into the room because it was like something I never saw before. And I was going to see it until it's in. And it was a very, I mean,
just like with the Playboys, you got to see it to its completion.
Yeah, yeah. It would take you maybe 20 seconds to see it, and probably take me like 2 hours, you know, whatever it is. You were the 22nd Tiger, I was All Night Alderman. And if anybody gets that reference, more power to you, because not a lot of people, even you don't get that reference. So it really, but what that promo was like, is really the groundwork for everything else. And then when Nash comes out, probably like 2 weeks later or something like that, now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? And this is starting to become really good. Now I'm starting to watch what's going on. But it all started because off of that one promo. And it's good that you, I'm very glad that you you know the 18th anniversary, because even I don't know, it was the 18th anniversary of that promo.
It was on Twitter a little bit today, but yeah. That's where I was reminded of it. So, but I thought, like, since we're gonna do our thing today, I think that was the perfect golden stick to go out on this fine day.
But that was the first promo that Scott Hall probably ever did in his life. You know, if you think about it,
because they were all like the pre-recorded canned stuff with Razor
yeah,
Ramon.
Yeah, and Razor Ramon never, you know, Razor Ramon was okay, but it was always kind of, you know, it's kind of the whole machine. It was kind of the, you know, we always talk about the Attitude Era, but if you want to get all hyperbolic on it, that promo started the Attitude Era, where it was just kind of the straight-laced thing. There was a lot of truth behind everything. He was calling out a lot of kind of the stupidity in what wrestling is, and then they went off on their own, and they kind of did the whole NWO thing, which really kind of changed everything. And it's just kind of funny that people think of the Attitude Era, they think of Stone Cold, they think of the Rock. Well, it started with Hall and Nash, and it even started with Hogan. Even though Hogan's promos were still pretty canned, but Hall and Nash really started the whole thing, and that promo really kind of started everything. And I'm trying to remember who the two guys wrestling were, and I think there was a Colonel Parker in there somewhere. There was maybe someone else, and everybody kind of just stopped what they were doing and whatever it was. But
they kind of made this whole big deal, like about what Shivani, what happened in the match?
Yeah, it's like, dude, Shivani, nobody cares about the damn match.
I don't even know what to say.
So you're 3 for 3.
I'd like to take a walk on this next one, because I don't really have a match.
You don't have a match?
I don't have a match.
So let's see. Let's see if I can fill some dead air space by...
You can go filibuster on this?
By rambling on and all that stuff. I'm trying to think of... let's do this. The match that everybody needs to see. Jake the Snake Roberts versus Ravishing Rick Rude. Saturday Night's main event. You remember that match, don't you?
I remember a bunch of matches with them, so I don't remember specifically. Was this the one where the wife came?
Yeah. So, and this one we actually had, you know, we talk about Scott Hall. This one actually had a really good build-up. It was like kind of one of the first times where they used someone kind of real in the crowd. Like this lady was in the crowd, and Rick Rude comes over to her and starts doing all of his Rick Rude stuff, and then she slaps him kind of out of nowhere. and he starts kind of, he grabs her by the, either like by the shoulder, by the throat, and then Jake the Snake comes out and protects her honor and stuff and everything, and just really threw everybody for a loop, going like, what the hell is this? Mm-hmm. And it was one of the first kind of real kind of storylines that I think WWE ever had, where it was actually like, you know, you could sit there and go like, well, this is pretty legit. Mm-hmm. So it comes out Saturday night's main event, and you were a huge Jake the Snake Roberts fan. And I think, actually, I don't know if you were a huge one, but I think this was like either you were a fan already, but I think this one put you over the top of that. Because I remember, I was trying to tell you, I was like, dude, I really like Ravishing Rick Rude. And normally, most of the time you'd back my play, right? You got to back your brother's play, right? And you're like, nah, I like Jake the Snake. And I was like, well, what does Jake the Snake have? What does he have, dude? He doesn't have anything. He has a DDT. And then you're like, nah, man, he has like a short arm clothesline. So you kind of told me why you like Jake, right? And I wanted Ravishing and Rick Rude to win. So it was Saturday night's main event. It was the second to the last match, but it should have been the main event. And I really made an effort to watch Jake the Snake work. And that was the night that I became a fan of Jake the Snake, based off of what you said. But then I started watching the guy. I started going like, this guy knows how to work within the ring. And Jake won that match. And but the buildup was great because it had... So you had the promo of Jake and Sherry, and she brings out the fig leaf, right? And saying, like, this is for, like, little Rick, because at the time, Rick Rude was coming out with airbrushed stuff of Sherry.
Was that the first time?
Cheryl, right?
Cheryl. Cheryl Roberts, yeah. Was that the first time he had her face?
He had her face on
his sides for a while?
Yeah. So he, I think, like, two matches before on, like, Saturday mornings or whatever it was. And so they made a big deal about kind of the airbrush tights, and I think Jake the Snake says, I'm like, yeah, it's like, if he comes out, I'm gonna pull it off and stuff. And then Cheryl came out, she's like, well, I have a fig leaf for little Rick and stuff. And the tights did get pulled off.
Yeah, like the thong underneath,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So, but I watched the whole match through, and it was probably one of the first matches where both guys came out on top after the match. And I really enjoyed it. Like, I thought Rude did a really good job. And Jake, you know, everything you said about Jake the Snake, about how he's kind of a, really kind of a, not a ring technician, but he's a ring psychologist. And we didn't know what a ring psychologist was back then. But all the reasons why you told me why you liked Jake the Snake was basically because he was a ring psychologist.
Yeah.
And it all came true in that match. And I thank you for letting me kind of like the good guy for a change and really look at his work. Because I think that was one of the first times where I started looking at wrestlers for who they were. And I thought Jake delivered on all ends, and I thought Rick Rude did as well.
Yeah, and I guess that's a pretty good exchange, because if I was the guy that kind of, like, hit you onto Jake the Snake, I mean, there's no doubt that you're the guy that kind of made me, like, realize, like, how good Rick Rude was. Mostly through the Ultimate Warrior feud, but, like, it was you're the guy that kind of, like, really liked Rick Rude and made me think about, like, well, yeah, you know, I was starting to realize what a gimmick was and realize, well, whatever the gimmick this guy's got, he's working it pretty good. And, you know, the promos about the South Alabama sweat hogs didn't hurt either. But, yeah, no, like...
For all you fat, out of shape, Louisiana sweat hogs.
But, no, yeah.
Get that camera out of my face.
Yeah. Well, their whole feud was good, so I don't really specifically remember the... Saturday night's main event. I remember I don't remember the match specifically. I remember your fig leaf comment over there. But I just remember, like, the feud that they had was good. Was one of the nice, like, physically they were evenly matched, like, size-wise. And they just kind of went at each other, and both of them got the upper hand at different times. And it was pretty, like, yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, when we're kids and we're trying to figure out, like, you know, we're told, like, that wrestling is not real. And, like, we believe that, you know, yeah, it's not real, but, like, you're watching it, and it had just enough realism to make you say, well, this could be, you know, this could be real, like, you know. It was a really good feud, and, you know, I know all the matches in it were really good, so.
So, whenever I look back on things that I, you know, that I remember and stuff, I kind of take a hyperbolic stance, and that main event was the first main event that I watched, where I recognized I was a big enough fan where I was going to spend a Saturday night and actually watch it and enjoy it. And it was at your house, and I remember it was after a soccer game, and we're trying to figure out, like, well, whose house should we, you know, should you spend the night at my house, or should I spend the night at your house? And we picked your house because we knew that we could get the TV at that time, and we could watch Saturday Night's Main Event. That was like, that to me, that was like kind of like the tipping point where it's like, okay, I am now a wrestling fan. I'm going to watch Saturday Night's Main Event, where before I wouldn't watch it because I was too above it, right? Like, oh, you know, wrestling's fake, this, that, and this. I suspended my disbelief, and I made a choice right then and there that I was going to be a wrestling fan. And it all started not because of that match, but because of all the matches that were involved. Probably the Young Stallions were in there too, with their Fabulous Rougeau Brothers or whatever it was. But, you know, I think later on that year, I went to Hawaii or something like that, and I made sure I watched Saturday Night's Main Event. And the good thing about that in Hawaii was that it came on like 4 or 5 o'clock. So, no, it's like on 4 or 5 o'clock. And they wanted me to go to like some Polynesian center in Oahu. I was like, nah, it's okay. You guys go. I'm like, ah. And they're like, well, you going to be fine? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm okay. And the second we left the house, I was like, ah, I'm in heaven. I like turned the flipping TV on, watched Saturday Night's Main Event. So that match led to me kind of really becoming, going full force of being a wrestling fan. And they turned the tables on me in a bad way.
In a wrong way.
Yeah, or wrong way, whatever it is. So, hey.
Those Motley Crues, man.
Yeah. Hey, you know, this should have been Moose Go 75.
it's all right.
No, but it's always, you know, I was looking forward to talking about wrestling today, even though I didn't know what the hell we were going to talk about, because I thought Raw was really bad. I thought SmackDown was kind of lackluster, but, you know, you coming in with your crumpled piece of paper or with your post-it notes and stuff, because I have all this stuff here.
Wait, the grocery list on the other side.
Does Evolution need four, Bo equals Tebow, Evo versus Shield, Payback, and then you have carrots, mushrooms,
exactly,
cabbage, chickens with bones, pasta, tomato, DW detergent, black bean cheese, chips, salsa, Capri Sun for the kids. Aww.
I got to go on the midnight run to the grocery store after this podcast.
Tonight?
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to...
No, I can go for a little bit.
Okay.
I go.
It's so late. My wife is waiting for me. You stupid mother. Where are you going? So at Moose Scale number 76, I got my boy Bad News Ramen. No. I'm my boy, Bad News.
You're your boy, Bad News Ramen.
I made you some good ass drinks, so give me a break. Better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen.
S. Phil Jackson said, give him some fucking credit.
I guess so. I don't know what that is. But I haven't been watching the NBA playoffs too much. None too much.
Sorry, that was about 5 years ago.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was watching NBA back then either. Even though I was in sports, I didn't watch NBA because it was kind of boring. So, better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We'll check you out next week. Payback's this Sunday?
Yeah, you're coming over.
I got a bartend. I'm a bartend.
Right. So come over.
After. Okay. So maybe I will, maybe I won't. But you should come in for a drink before and then head on out. So Musco number 76, I am Bad News Ramen. We have Ben and I have my donuts over here. And we're I'm not gonna say good to go Rodney O, but we are good to go Rodney O. We'll check you out next week. Oh, no.